Are you ready to create a life of balance, abundance, and joy? To live from a place of right intention and right alignment in all that you do? Then tune in right now to Living on Purpose with your host, Carolyn Romano. Living on Purpose is about standing in the center of your life so that no matter what's happening around you, you can respond from a place of peace and strength. Living on Purpose is about being deliberately aligned with the ways you're meant to serve and grow while staying open to experiencing life fully. Living on Purpose is a time for us to come together to remember our divine selves while we learn and wonder about, weigh and consider, and unpack and repack the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life.
Welcome to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano. I'm Carolyn Romano, your host, and I'm delighted to be here with you tonight. I'd like to go over just a few housekeeping details before we dive in. This show is also aired on DreamVision7Radio.com at 2 p.m. and 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mondays and Tuesdays, as well as on other affiliates. You can download past shows at the Dream Vision 7 archive and on iTunes. The Dream Vision 7 network has over 1.3 million listeners in more than 135 countries. We've got lots of great shows and new hosts joining all the time, so I invite you to have a listen. Please like my Facebook page, Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, if you need to be in touch with me. You can contact me at 508-481-2547 or carolyn@blisshealingarts.com. Our last show was called Dogs, Angels of Loyalty. In that episode, I talked about my love affair with animals and dogs in particular, what they teach me, how they inspire me. I also spoke about my vision for creating Charlie's Place, a healing sanctuary for animals and their people. I've recently purchased a small farm in central Massachusetts that will serve as home base for the sanctuary. And you can find out more about that in the DreamVision7Radio.com archive. But tonight, I welcome you to the official inaugural episode of Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, Animal Edition. Our show tonight is called Animals Are People Too, and I'm delighted to have with me Susie Costin. Susie's the National Shelter Director of Farm Sanctuary, which has locations in both New York and California. Farm Sanctuary rescues, rehabilitates, and provides lifelong care for hundreds of animals who have been saved from stockyards, factory farms, and slaughterhouses. Susie Costin joined the Farm Sanctuary staff in March 2000 after 6 years of working for a veterinarian and at a sanctuary in West Virginia. She oversees what I understand are lots and lots of folks who ensure that hundreds of animals under Farm Sanctuary's care have the best lives possible. Susie also mentors others who started their own sanctuaries throughout the United States and leads Farm Sanctuary's annual Farm Animal Care Conference. Susie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's wonderful that you could be here with us. I thought we'd dive right in. You know, one of the reasons, Susie, that I do this show is to reflect on, you know, for myself and for others, how to be more aligned with the ways we're meant to serve. So I'm curious a little bit about your path and how you came to be at the sanctuary and how you came to be called the Farm Whisperer.
The Farm Whisperer part's funny. I came like a lot of people come. I was very lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I felt very alone. And I was in a pretty depressed place when I started working with animals. And I started at a place called the Pig Sanctuary. And the whole reason I started there was because I was looking through the yellow pages and it said, the Pig Sanctuary, where a pig can be a pig. And I was like, that is really, really funny. So I thought that I would like going there. And so I started volunteering there. And in less than a few months, I started working there full time. And that's where I started. And I find that animals are a really, they're healing. They're very, especially animals that come from rescue, they're very grateful. And they express that gratitude. And, you know, it's an unconditional type of love, but it also kind of took me out of, you know, my own place, like that I was just kind of obsessing over my own stuff and put mm-hmm. me, you know, on a path to, you know, try everything to help them, because I feel like animals actually made me heal. So now it's like, you know, my turn to make them heal.
Yeah, you know, I find that there's something very special about the way that animals can be so present. And I think when we are kind of in those dark places or just not able to be, you know, be in the present moment, that's when we're in our least powerful place. And so to connect in with animals, I think, is a great, like, road back. So it's interesting to hear you say that. Now, had you always had this special connection with animals? Was it something that, you know, rose up when, you know, where pigs can be pigs stumbled?
It's funny because I grew up in a home where I have a mother who's really frightened of animals. Like, from kittens on, she's always very not comfortable with them because she grew up, you know, thinking that they were dangerous and, you know, scary. Mm-hmm. And so I think everybody has, like, a specific upbringing. But she didn't want us to be scared of them, so she allowed them in the house. But my whole life, I've been drawn to them more than I think I'm drawn to people. Like, if I still go to somebody's house, the first thing I'm doing is looking around to see if there's an animal. But I've always done that. So I would always kind of be, if I go to a party, I'm usually hanging out with the dog first, and then I'll talk to people as well. But yeah, I think that, you know, certain people, you know, humans are all very different. But even growing up in a household where, you know, there was a fear from one of my parents, it still, I'm adopted, so we say it's a genetic issue. I'm totally drawn to them all the time, and I see them all the time. And I think, you know, you can walk through life and not see animals, and I've always seen animals. So it was kind of a joke that I always found stray cats and puppies and birds and everybody. But I do think that, yeah, I've always just been drawn to animals. I find them healing. I find them fascinating, and I get so much pleasure out of being around them. So, I think it's a win-win when I get to work with them all the time.
So what is a typical day like for you at Farm Sanctuary?
It's kind of atypical. A typical day.
There is no typical day.
There's not. It changes because a lot of what we do is respond to rescue calls, to calls where animals need help, to calls, you know, where an animal has escaped, or calls from, you know, any place in the country where an animal is, you know, in jeopardy because they need rescue. So we do rescue. But on a day-to-day basis, like in the walk-ins, I'll just do one shelter because it's very hard. We actually have four right now. We have two in California.
Four.
Yeah, and we're starting one in New Jersey. But one of my managers just moved there, so she's actually going to run the one in New Jersey. So we have over 1,000 animals right now. So a lot of my day is talking to all of the sanctuaries. I usually talk to them almost every day. Not so much in New Jersey yet because it's much smaller. But I talk to them every day, and we go through animal care issues. It's like a constant training here. We're constantly learning new ways of taking care of these animals. But currently we have about, just in Watkins Glen, we have about 150 of them on some type of medication or treatment, like pain management. We have elderly animals. We have animals that are kind of like a hospice care. I mean, it's not a lack of quality of life, but they're at the end of their life. So we have all a range from brand new babies that we just took in last week. We have three triplet baby boys to, you know, cattle that are in their 20s, almost 30. So we have such a range of animals here, and their care is very, very specific. And this is one of the places where you can come and actually learn that care, because most people don't see farm animals that are geriatric, especially because, you know, they're used for food, so they don't get to live into old age. So, you know, we have a great relationship with Cornell, so we're dealing with doctors all the time, trying to come up with new ways to, you know, take care of animals that most people have never even seen. Yeah, and it's very, very interesting. So it's never dull. We have a great group. I have the best staff at all of our locations. I have amazing staff. But here, again, in Watkins, because it's just easier to focus on one, like, we have an AM person and a PM person, so for healthcare. So the AM person comes in and opens everybody up in the morning and does all their morning meds, and then they make up medication in the middle of the day with the PM person, and then they go out and do once-a-day items, and then the PM person is here right now, and she'll actually close the farm down, so everybody that needs to be locked in at night is locked in, but she also does the nighttime medications. And they then have to write down everything that they've done and the observations. We have an ISO area that one person does all of that care, because those are incoming animals or animals, you know, that aren't on the main farm. So they take care of all of their care. And then we have one person that all they do is feeds, because there's a lot of animals. We have 600 animals.
Wow.
Location.
And so how much are you guys relying on volunteers to help with all this? And
well,
how much?
We've been doing this long enough, thankfully, because I think that's what we see so much is volunteer when you first start. So when we first started, it was all volunteer. Now we have, I have a staff. I have a very large staff, but that took 30 years. I think that's the thing that people have to remember. It didn't happen like in the first year.
Sure.
But we still rely very heavily on volunteers. We have an amazing intern program. I currently have 6 interns that work 40 hours a week on the farm. Just here, and then we have I think we have 4 or 5 in Orland at our larger location. We're not doing an intern program right now at our smaller locations because we don't have housing set up. But the interns come and stay, so they actually live here, and they're just amazing too. I mean, you can't function. You know, there's just so much to do in a day. It's like an endless day anyway. So we do rely still very heavily on our volunteer program, and then we have regular volunteers also that come in.
And what is it like for you when you think you started there in 2000, so it's like, what, 16, 17 years? Like, I'm the national director of Farm Sanctuary. Like, what is it like for you to, like, think back over, like, your journey and coming there and everything that's happened?
The journey was rough, and as much as I love this job more than anything in the world, but this is a job where you see a lot of people come and go, because it's a very easy job to develop, like, compassion fatigue and burnout, and you have to step back and really take care of yourself and try to, like, refocus, because, you know, part of what we do, and it's a strange thing. It's very hard to see it, and it's something that I have to talk about with my staff all the time, is we're taking care of animals that the majority of the population eat. So it's a very hard place to be when you're devastated over the loss of a chicken. And then, you know, like, even when I call my house, my mom will be like, oh, we just had a great chicken dinner. That is not what I needed to hear right now. So it's a very strange place to be, because, you know, the majority of the population are eating the animals that we're saving. So but at the same time, it's, you know, you lose them and there's that kind of a devastation, but there's also going to the rescues, and the rescues are sometimes very egregious and very hard and very painful, and there are losses when, you know, before you even get to those places. So a lot of times you go to places and, you know, there's a lot of death already there, and that's trying and hard and emotional, and we know about, like, because we're, you know, we learn, you want to learn as much as you can about these animals and where they come from. And the majority now are raised in industrial farming. They're not on the small farms that, you know, we used to think they were on. You don't see most of these animals anymore.
So many people still think that that's how it is.
Yeah, I think the industry, you know, is such so large that it wants you to think that. I think it's easier to think that. When we go to places like when we went to the floods in Iowa. That was probably mentally one of the harder places to go, because there were just so many animals and so much devastation, and devastation for people too. You know, like, I think that's another thing that people assume, that if you're, you know, rescuing farm animals and you're living, like, plant-based, that you don't like people, and I actually love people. So I don't like to see anyone go through anything like this. And so these animals are the animals that I'm very close to. But I no one, I don't think any being should have to suffer at any, you know, in this way, in the manner that we see these animals have to suffer. So, yeah, it's a difficult balance when you go on rescues, because there sometimes, like at the Iowa rescue is the best example. Again, you had so much devastation for people, too, and they were angry that we were coming in to take care of animals and not. And I think the assumption was we didn't care what happened to them, mm-hmm. And it wasn't true at all. And it was very, very hard to, you know, come in and, you know, rescue animals that they were thinking of as their livelihood, and they were losing their livelihood, and we were seeing them as like sentient creatures who we really wanted to rescue as individuals. And it was a very strange balance. And that one, I actually lost so many of my staff from that rescue, and I think a lot of it was just the emotional ups and downs, not only from being down in Iowa and seeing all of that and the devastation, but then coming back and having to deal with animals that were very traumatized.
Sure.
Yeah, so it has its complications.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and thinking about some, I have a particular interest in trauma and how that gets healed and resolved. And so, you know, what is the approach that you guys take at Farm Sanctuary around helping animals heal from their trauma? I'm sure it depends, but, you know, do you do any kind of alternative healing for them, or just how does that sort of unfold?
It's interesting because there's so many thoughts on this and so many people that have very strong opinions on what's the best. And I've been doing this for about, I think, 22 years now. It's crazy. And what I've found, especially, and again, it's different populations of animals. So with farm animals, you're talking about animals in all of our animals that have a very high flight response. These aren't carnivores. They're not predators. They're prey animals. They're also flock and herd animals, so they don't like to be alone. So you don't want one pig. Pigs like to be with other pigs. They may fight, but they need to have a herd, and they need that structure that goes along with a herd. Sheep are probably the best example of an animal that needs flock. Like, they need to be with their own people. So what we try so desperately to do, and it's hard because, you know, I think we have this thing, I think it's just human nature that you want all these animals to fall in love with you and love you, and they're not going to. Some of them don't want to. And they've already gone through so much. And what I personally have found is you need to learn to read them. And that's where the animal whisperer comes in, I think, because it's sitting back and not putting your own needs in there at all. Like, it's sitting back and kind of watching, like, what does this animal want from me? And if what they want from me is for me to stay away, that might be the best thing to do right away. Unless they have some injury or something that we have to deal with right away. We try to give an animal space when they need space. We never force ourselves on an animal unless it's a medical treatment, and then we do it very carefully, like very, like, quietly and peacefully and in a way that's going to be the least devastating. But the number one thing we do is try as hard as we can to get all the testing done and everything done to make sure that they're disease-free so that we can put them with their own people. Or we try to rescue. Sometimes I will actually rescue another sheep, even if I don't have any space. If I have one single sheep, I will look for another rescue to get another animal, mm-hmm. because they just are terrified of being alone. And the difference between having one sheep and having two sheep is night and day. And to heal when you're under that much duress is almost impossible. So it's allowing them to, you know, create this family of their own and this support system of their own. And it's something that we can't necessarily always give them, because some animals love people. They love people, but some of them don't. And if people are the thing that has always caused them that kind of trauma and fear, allowing them to have their own people is more of what they need. So, yeah, I've had animals when they first come smash into walls and fences and actually hurt themselves. Like, they'll bleed because they hit them so hard out of just absolute fear. And it can be one little movement. So we create, you know, areas that are safe for them to stay in if they're like that. But we also will put an animal near them, or we make sure that they're not completely alone. Because even with 100 people, they're going to feel very much alone if that's
possible.
Yeah. That's what they
fear. It's interesting, you know, as I hear you talk about this, first of all, because you said, you know, putting animals with their people, and, you know, when I was trying to come up with a name for the show, this, like, animals are people, too, popped into my head. But also because I recently rescued or am fostering a German Shepherd who had very little contact. She's 7 now, but very little contact with people, and she's really scared of humans. And I have to really be quite careful and very observant to make sure that she's sort of feeling safe, and if she's not, like, giving her the space to decide whether or not she wants to participate, right, you know, with, you know, other humans. So I know we're going to bump up against the break soon, but, you know, thinking about, you know, your experiences with so many animals, you know, what are some things you can share about sort of a window into their consciousness and their, you know, quote-unquote humanity, if you will?
Okay. Well, there's some million stories of who they are. I think one of the things when you have an animal that, you know, really clearly exists for profit, it is very difficult for that animal to be seen, and their needs to be met. So what we've seen and I think it's just a blessing to see it. I've never, every day that they do this, it's just miraculous to me. But they love each other so much, and I think that we forget that, you know, they love their children, they want to protect their families, and they're no different than us in that way. So I have animals right now who have, you know, given birth on this farm, and for the first time have been allowed to keep that baby.
Oh, wow.
And they sleep with that baby every night and until the day they die. And it is one of the most amazing things to see that if you were to let them just be who they are, they're so much like us. They don't want to lose their people. Yeah. So
that's perfect. Okay, well, we're hitting the break, so I'll let Brad take us to break, and we'll talk to everybody in a few.
Living your values, looking for companions on the path. With wisdom, humor, and compassion, artist Sarah Jepson-Zitter answers many of the questions we have about living a spiritually grounded life. Check out her stunning graphic novels and designs on cards, mugs, and other cool gifts at gnomestedding.com. That's gnomestedding.com. Or call Sarah at 978-897-6239 for more information.
Donna Schatz is a licensed acupuncturist located in the Porter Square, Cambridge area of Somerville. With over 25 years of experience, Donna combines massage, acupuncture, and Reiki in her work while focusing on each client's individual needs. Contact Donna at 617-776-3065 or visit www.donnaschatz.com. That's 617-776-3065 or donnaschatz.com.
Since 2004, Old Dog Haven in Washington State has been providing loving, safe homes for senior dogs ages 8 and up who've been abandoned or are homeless at this time in their lives. Wonderful foster families take these old dogs into their homes, making their golden years happy years. For more information or to make a tax-deductible contribution, visit olddoghaven.org. Old Dog Haven, providing hope, love, and comfort for senior dogs.
Life. We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
A great mystery is upon humanity. For just over 200 years, mankind has been capable of accessing insights and understandings of how the universe works, unlike any other moment in man's history.
This age has brought unimaginable wonders into our lives. But what if there were a new way to learn? An evolutionary next step?
Listen in to the Human Accelerator every third Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, when Dream Vision 7 Radio Network broadcasts from 1510 a.m. on your dial, WMEX Boston.
Love Never Dies is now on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every second and fourth Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, a.k.a. Dr. Love, is the number one international best-selling author of Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. If you're grieving the loss of a loved one, tune in to find out how to reconnect and heal any unfinished business using Dr. Turndorf's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique. This show is for you, the listener, and Dr. Turndorf wants to hear from you. Call 866-338-9663 or 617-237-1234.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, Animal Edition. This show is a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast at AM 1510 WMEX Boston. If you're just joining us, I have with me tonight on the show Susie Costin, who is the National Shelter Director of Farm Sanctuary, which has locations in both New York and California. Before the break, Susie was sharing with us some of her reflections on the animals that she's been able to care for and learn from. Susie, thanks for hanging with us for the rest of the hour. Any other stories that you wanted to share about animals that you've been in contact with that have particularly affected you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I think when you're around them, I think one of the animals that are the most difficult for people, I think, to connect with, although there are a lot of people that have them, are chickens, and registering that chickens, you know, have those same abilities that mammals have, or those same sentient qualities that mammals have. I think it's, you know, we're so different than birds in so many ways, that birds are kind of seen as not having, you know, some of the feelings that mammals have, but it's really definitely not true. And I get to see that as well. One of the stories that I've told a few times, I haven't really talked about it a lot, was when I worked at the other sanctuary that I worked at before I came to Farm Sanctuary. And this is a lesson that, you know, I hope everybody learns before it ever happens. But they had chickens at that sanctuary, and I think it was my third week of just volunteering. And the chickens were not put away at night. Like here, we put them away, we count them. We have like whiteboards that tell you who lives where, so you can make sure that everybody's in, because chickens can't actually see in the dark. And so they perch as high as they can, and their feet lock, and so they can be up in trees. But unfortunately, there's a lot of predators that can climb. And so at this particular place, they never locked up their chickens, and I guess for, you know, a year. They never had a problem. And then one morning, I came in and I was doing a morning shift, and there were dead chickens everywhere, and it was devastating. And I just remember this just overwhelming feeling of just sickness over it. It made me so sick, and I had no idea what had happened. I had talked to a vet, and the vet said it sounded like raccoons and all these. He was saying it was probably a group that came in, and basically, you know, 30 chickens were killed. And aww. I was looking and, you know, collecting the bodies, and I was so upset, and I saw a little rooster, like a little bantam rooster that they hadn't gotten, and he was terrified. So I caught him, and I put him in a pen because I was like, he's got to be safe, and I'm going to keep him inside at night, and I was going to change everything that they did, and they agreed, and so that was great. And then I was still doing rounds again during the day, and I found another hen, and she was kind of wedged under a barn, and she was from a totally different flock. And so I brought her to the barn, and I put her in the cage, and both of these birds had seen all of their family killed, and so they were terrified. They were absolutely terrified.
Wow.
And so that night I went to close everybody up, and I had a flashlight. I was walking around in a barn, and I flashed the light over to the pen where I put them, and I had put a perch in because they like to perch up. So it was a big cage with a perch, and they were as tight as they could be together, and the female hen had the bantam under her wing, sleeping. And it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, because it was like they needed each other so much, and they were so frightened, and they were never apart after that. They were always together. So, and we always, you know, that was the new rule, was to put those chickens away. So at night we would put the chickens away. And so I've always been obsessed with the birds getting put away. But I've seen that so many times. I've seen, you know, birds. We had a cat that tried to attack a blue jay at our bird feeder, and all the chickens went after the cat.
Oh, wow. They're looking out for each other.
Yeah,
so, Susie, how long does a chicken live if they're allowed to, you know, live out their natural life?
The oldest industry chicken we've ever had was 15, which is crazy, because the industry birds tend to die, especially the laying hens, tend to die much earlier. They have reproductive cancers and reproductive issues, like reproductive health issues, because of the number of eggs they lay and how unhealthy they usually are when they come in. But the oldest one we've had is 15. My non-industrial chickens, especially the laying breeds, usually live about 8 to 10. Sometimes they'll get up to like 15. But 15 is kind of high. And again, the problem is most of the birds that we rescue are industrial birds, so they don't have as long a lifespan. Or we rescue birds that come from, like, these really, you know, really horrible places. So they don't ever, we never get to rescue really healthy animals. So they kind of come in with a lot going on already. But, 15 is the oldest that we've had here. I've heard of birds living longer than that, chickens, when they're
in it. So a lot of laying hens. So what do you guys do with all the eggs?
We actually hard-boil all of the eggs. And we feed them back to the commercial layers, so the ones that have problems forming shells. A lot of those birds, when they come in, you have to remember that they're not, most of them come from cage facilities, so there's like, you know, 10 in a cage. And they literally have no place to go. Like, they don't ever leave that cage. So they're kind of, they have like kind of a cage craziness to them. They usually come in with nails that have wrapped around the cages, so they're very long nails. They've never been outside. So they've never felt grass or dirt or sun or anything. So these are birds that come in and they have, you know, osteoporosis. Their bones are brittle. They have a lot of problems. So when we first get them from that industry, we don't put up high perches because we don't want them jumping because they break their legs. And so we need to supplement their diet in a way that's giving back what they've lost through production, because production's very hard on the body as well. And if you've ever seen an industrial leghorn, especially, they weigh 3 to 4 pounds. They're tiny. But they're producing these giant grade A extra large white eggs. So their body takes a big hit from all those eggs. So what we do is we collect everybody, so the turkeys, the ducks, the geese, and the chickens. We hard boil all the eggs and we mash them up, shells and all, and feed them back to the birds that are in production. So the ones that are still laying eggs, to help strengthen the shells of the eggs that they lay, because the soft-shelled eggs are actually a big health problem for them. They get egg bound, they get impactions, they get all these things if they're not laying healthy eggs. And, you know, they don't keep them in the industry for more than 2 years. And they really lay usually about 5 years. Just the production slows down. And so after that, we don't feed them the eggs because they actually gain weight. They actually get very healthy after they stop laying, which is very interesting. But they don't need that extra, you know, calcium and the extra calories that they would get from the eggs.
Wow, I had no idea. That's really interesting. And so how many chickens do you guys have at your locations?
We have 300 here in Watkins Glen, only because we just took in a rescue with an extra. We took in 200, and we've placed the majority of them, but we're right now very high. We have homes, amazing homes for laying hens. So the laying hens, when they come in, we take months to get them healthy, and then they usually go to homes, which is nice. And they get these amazing homes. We have such good adopters. So we have an adoption program as well. But right now, yeah, we have our highest number of animals right now at this location, are hens. And in Orland, I think we have about 150, and we have about 50 in Acton, and we don't actually have chickens yet in New Jersey.
Wow, you know, I didn't know we were going to go in the direction of all these chickens, but yeah. It's a really valid point that, like, just the story you told at the top of the segment about, you know, the bonding that's possible, and I'm just really encouraging people to think about birds in this way that, you know, they're sentient too. Like, I think a lot of people can say, okay, like, I, for a long time, was like, okay, I can't eat pigs. They're, you know, they're smarter than dogs, blah, blah, blah. And then I got to, like, to cows and not being able to, okay, I can't eat them. And then the dairy because the babies are torn from their moms, and that just is incredibly cruel. But I had a place where, like, okay, chickens were okay, similar to what you were saying. And fish, too. Like, okay, well, what about fish? So
yeah, it's interesting. And they are all sentient. It's
right.
I think that it is just so easy to forget. I mean, we're already caught up with our own lives enough, I think, that we don't notice stuff going on with other humans. So mm-hmm. if you want to extend that to, like, birds and fish, I mean, people are like, oh, my God, I can't even think about, like, my neighbor right now. So it is very, very difficult. Yeah, and I find that, yeah, with birds and fish, it is one of the harder connections for people to make.
Yeah. All right, well, here we are at our second break. When we come back, I think I'm going to ask you to tell us how people go about starting an animal sanctuary. So, Brad, take us a break. And we will be back in a few. Thanks for listening.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Harvard holistic psychiatrist and psychoanalyst Dr. Judy Tsafrir offers empowering astrology and tarot readings that provide insight and guidance regarding love, work, and higher purpose. For more information, call 617-965-3020 or visit bostonastrologer.com or bostontarot.com. Readings are available via phone, Skype, and in person in Newton Center, Massachusetts.
Maybe you have clear goals for your life but wish you were making more progress. Or perhaps you have no idea where you're headed, yet you still feel a sense of urgency to get there. Wherever you find yourself at this moment, consider how you will benefit from shamanic coaching with Carolyn Romano of Bliss Healing Arts in Massachusetts. This face-to-face approach works on achieving alignment on all four levels of your existence: mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical. Shamanic coaching combines traditional coaching methods with energy medicine, mind-body skill building, and shamanic techniques. The goal, to help people create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. Call Carolyn at 508-481-BLIS. That's 508-481-2547. Or visit blisshealingarts.com and get your bliss on.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Mark your calendars now to attend the Theosophical Society's 6th Annual Day of Healing and Insight on Saturday, January 14th, 2012, located at the TS on 21 Maple Street in Arlington, Massachusetts. Work with top intuitive and alternative healing professionals at a very reasonable rate. Each 25-minute session is just $20. Try energy work, intuitive readings, astrology, body work, and more. For more information and to register, visit tsboston.org. That's tsboston.org. All proceeds benefit the Theosophical Society.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show every first and third Sunday, 9 to 10 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Every first and third Sunday from 9 to 10 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. What if everything that you've been taught about who you are and what life is has been untrue? Join Deborah Laval, host of Living in Quantum Love, where she'll explore and dissect the limiting beliefs and wrong understandings that have only served to keep us not only separate from one another, but from our own selves. Living in Quantum Love can be heard every third Sunday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Join Deborah and take a leap to freedom.
This is Dream Vision 7 radio network. Uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, Animal Edition. This show is a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast at AM 1510 WMEX Boston. If you're just joining us, we are in our final segment of Animals Are People Too. I have with me tonight Susie Costin, who is the National Shelter Director of Farm Sanctuary, which has locations in both New York and California. Susie, thanks for hanging with us.
Sure, this is great.
So in this last segment, I wanted to talk a little bit about all those people who say, if I had a lot of money, I'd quit my job and open an animal sanctuary. So I know you mentor folks who, you know, want to start their own sanctuary. So what does that sort of mentoring look like? What do you, you know, how do you advise people who are contemplating the sanctuary life?
I think it's one of the most difficult because everyone comes into that, you know, from a place of love and from a place of wanting to help and rescue, and it is not an easy job. It is one of the most difficult jobs that you can have because it becomes all consuming, especially when you first start. Like I said, we have a big staff. We didn't used to have a big staff. Even when I started, we didn't have a big staff, and it was, you know, 18-hour days or 16-hour days and, you know, 7 days a week and never taking vacation and all-consuming because, you know, the animals actually need help. It is extremely difficult with farm animals because there's not a lot of laws to protect them. So in a sanctuary setting, a lot of times what we're seeing are people are taking on too many, and they're actually as bad as some of the cases where we've removed animals because they can't say no, and it spirals very quickly. And it is very difficult to keep up with animals, especially if you have too many, and you don't have people to take care of them. Health issues spiral. So I think most people go at it at a good place, but tend to, one of the things we see and the things that has become the most concerning are starting and trying to get too big too quickly, and not focusing down on just the few. And again, you know, it's one of the things in Gene's book about there, you know, there's 9.2 billion animals. You can't save them all. And so those animals that you save, you need to give a life that is spectacular, because we want people to see them as individuals. So they require individual care and individual noticing them, like noticing if there's a problem. Just like, you know, you wouldn't go out and get 20 dogs. And if you did, as a person just with dogs, you can love them. But having 20 would kind of take away from the life that those 20 have. So it's trying to have that balance. And it's not easy to do. And it's not easy to raise money to take care of them. And it's not easy to do all of those things that with us we've been doing now for 30 years. And, you know, we've got it down to a science now. But the course that we teach, I teach a course with two of my managers, and actually three of my managers now, and we teach it once a year. It's a three-day course on starting a sanctuary. But we also have our development people come, and we have communications people come. So people, we're talking about the whole thing. We're talking about, you know, HR issues and having staff and raising money and, you know, getting the word out and, you know, how to do social media and all of those things, because most sanctuaries start with one or two people, and it can quickly spiral out of control even without volunteers if you don't, you know, have a plan and a strategy and you don't start slow. Because, you know, I wish you could save. We get calls for thousands of animals, sometimes a month. And
wow.
It's impossible.
How do you handle that?
Well, we have a lot of places. We put out the word that they need homes. We try to send them in different directions to help them to get homes. But, I mean, we've even become much more nervous about sending them to sanctuaries, because every year, like, we just took back 5 cows this weekend all the way from Florida because the sanctuary is closing. And it's a sanctuary that we placed animals with in 2012, and now they're being foreclosed on. We didn't realize they were leasing land, so our criteria even to place at sanctuaries has changed, because we have to take them back if something happens. And unfortunately, a lot of them, you know, start out like gangbusters, and then they kind of plateau. And during that plateau period, you know, there might be too many animals or not enough money coming in, and things spiral very quickly. And if you have the place that we're talking about that we just took 5 cows back from has 600 animals. And
oh, wow.
What do you do? So that's what I mean. So it always sounds beautiful, but there's not enough money on the planet to keep, you know, throwing at places if they don't have a plan and they're taking in too many animals, because again, the situation is endless. It's endless with dogs and cats.
Right.
No one can save the millions, you know, that are euthanized every year. You just can't. And I wish you could. So I think it's just as much about education as it is about rescue. And, you know, we love doing rescue because the individual benefits clearly. The course that we teach is kind of a reality check on the shelter side, especially showing what you need to know, because I think another problem is with farm animals, again, and with all animals, I've heard the same with primate sanctuaries even, that people don't actually have hands-on experience with those animals. And you can make a lot of mistakes that you really shouldn't make. So one of the things that, you know, I try to get people to do is volunteer at a sanctuary that is doing actual health care, like taking care of their animals really well. And there's places where you can, you know, find out, you know, are these sanctuaries legitimate sanctuaries? And learn as much as you can about the care needs of these animals that you're going to take in. And make sure you have a vet that can take care of those animals. Because you get in a bind very quickly, and again, when you have groups of animals, things can spread very quickly too, and it gets out of control. And so it's basically, the course is kind of showing just how many of those things can happen.
Right.
Yeah. It
after is a you go through the 3 days, if you still have the courage,
yeah. Well,
and a plan.
Most people end up not starting.
I imagine that was the case.
Yeah, and if they do, hopefully they start slow. But it is sad because we see usually 2 to 3 a year are closing down, just the farm sanctuaries. So it's farm animal sanctuaries that are not connected to us but are just sanctuaries that, again, I think start out with the best of intentions. So it's just being really mindful and careful about how far you extend yourself, just like with anything.
Sure.
What you're doing, yeah.
And shifting gears a tiny bit, what advice do you have for folks who want to sort of start eating less or fewer animal products? Like, what's the best way to approach that?
Well, the best, I mean, it's so easy now. Like, when I first went vegan, it was like rice and beans. I'm going to sneeze, by the way. Excuse me, sorry. But now there's Gardein makes things that are just off the charts. I've never in my life had meat substitutes that are so close to actually having the texture and the taste. There's new cheeses coming up, because I know cheese is a big issue for a lot of people. But there's so many different products. And the thing I think I like, the best about them is they're actually – animal products are really not that good for you. And it's they cause a lot of the diseases that we see, like heart disease and cholesterol problems and all of these things, are not – you don't have a cholesterol problem with – there's no cholesterol in plant-based eating. So it's one of those things that, makes you feel better. I just sneezed, but I sneezed because I'm, who knows what's happening, allergies. But I don't get sick. I don't miss work for being sick. I haven't missed work because I was sick for probably, 15 years, 16 years.
Wow.
And it's amazing. And it really did change when I changed my diet. And I like a diet because, you do so many things in life that you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that. Like, I feel like it's easy to make mistakes constantly, and you learn from them. But I want one thing in my life that I feel like I'm not harming anybody when I'm doing it. Because I hate when you find out, you're eating, like when you're drinking coffee and they're like, do you realize that deforestation because of your coffee? And it's like, ah, and it feels like it's just an endless barrage of all the things you do wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So it's trying to be mindful, because with animals, I really love animals, and, I can't save the entire planet, and I'm not going to, I'm not ever going to be a perfect person. And I try to learn from all my mistakes, but the one thing I never, ever want to do, especially it's hurt an animal that it's because they can't help themselves. They can't. And it's not that I don't love people. I love people, but animals are so vulnerable to us. And I never want to do anything to any animal that can hurt them. So I try to be as mindful as I can. And one of the easiest ways to do that, especially with the population that I take care of, is to not eat meat, because that's who I take care of, and that's who I'm so bonded with. And I think, it's an easy way that I can feel really good that I am doing the best that I can for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking on the break about my trying as hard as I can to lead a vegan lifestyle, and just moment by moment, I'm like talking myself through it. Like if there's ice cream to be had, we're not having ice cream, and why are we not having ice cream? It's because of dairy. I have to have these conversations to just to really sort of reinforce it. So it is great that there are so many more options out there, so you can kind of manage it okay. But it can be hard until you decide it's not going to be hard, I guess.
Yeah, I think with mine, even if it was hard, but I so wanted to do it, and I don't think that, I think that people have a feeling too that if somebody's vegan, they're more self righteous and they think they're better than somebody else. I don't even think it's that. I think it's it's the same as the people that are making choices about coffee or where they get everything they get. Like, they only buy organic produce, and in this case, it's something that I feel very, very strongly that, I don't want to do. I don't want to hurt an animal. So it was as hard as it seemed. I find it so easy to do now that I'm doing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Susie, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
It's been a wonderful conversation. Remember, you can find out more about Susie and her important work at farmsanctuary.org. Our next show is on April 9th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, where we'll have another episode of Living on Purpose, Animal Edition. Listeners, until next time, I wish you all moments of grace descending. Take good care.
Thank you for tuning into Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Please join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. when we unpack and examine the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Living on Purpose is about being deliberately aligned with the ways we're meant to serve and grow, while staying open to experiencing life fully. It's about recognizing and becoming the fullest expressions of who we are. It's about envisioning the lives we're meant to be living, and then joyfully living from that end. Yes, Boston and beyond. Until next time, get your bliss on. For more info, visit blisshealingarts.com.